May it please the Court. My name is Saul Huerta, and I represent Delcy Arqueta-Ramos. Your Honor, first, I do not want to waive the issue that the collective advisement in this case, and this was the first thing that was argued, we don't want to waive that issue, but I do understand that under Escamilla-Rojas in that panel held that the collective advisement was proper under Rule 11. And so I do not want to waive that issue, but I won't delve into it at this time. I do want to point out that under Escamilla-Rojas, they did find that when there is a large delay between that collective advisement and when the person is actually asked about whether or not they understood that advice, that that can be a violation of Rule 11. And as it happened in Escamilla-Rojas, and as it happened in Aguilar-Vera, that also happened in this case.
Well, we don't know how much time, though, right?
We do not know, Your Honor.
We just know she was in the eighth small group.
Right. And so what happened is in between the original advisement and Ms. Arqueta-Ramos being asked about it, 35 individuals went through a change of plea proceeding and were found guilty, and 35 individuals went through a sentencing phase and were sentenced by the court. Now, obviously, it's not the same as a standard change of plea and sentencing hearing that you would see, which would probably each take 30 minutes or so. But I just wanted to point out that there is still quite a bit of time. Even if the judge were able to do a change of plea and sentencing in 2 minutes, we're still talking about 70 minutes that would have elapsed.
What is it you're not arguing? Some type of group advisal, you said?
Right. Escamilla-Rojas.
As such, you mean?
Right. As a violation in and of itself of the personal address language of Rule 11.
As to the original advisements, but you're also arguing with regard to the smaller group, five-person.
Correct. I'm arguing, based on Escamilla-Rojas, I cannot argue that the advisements should have been contemporaneous, basically at the same time as the
right.
as the court verifying it. But I am arguing that, again, under Escamilla-Rojas, that because there was that large delay between the original advisement and then being called up as five, you know, in a group of five to find out whether or not you understood them, that that delay is the basis for the Rule 11 violation.
Are you also arguing that with respect to the rights waiver there had to be a one-on-one discussion with her?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's a different argument.
Right. That's correct.
And that's not precluded by any case?
I'm sorry?
That's not precluded by any of the case law?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. Escamilla-Rojas says it's okay to do this group. It basically indicated that you could do this because in Escamilla-Rojas, the groups that were called up, I think, were seven or eight individuals at the time. So there was no holding of that, but, you know, factually, I guess you could say that they found that it was okay for that.
You know, the
there.
Magistrate judge had difficulty with this, and I'm still having difficulty listening to you. What exactly are you saying was wrong? You apparently are not raising the fact that the elements of the offense were never explained. You said, that's fine. She told the magistrate judge, that's good enough. We don't care about that, basically. So they never told the elements of the offense. But you're not raising that. So what precisely is your objection? Be very precise.
Okay.
It's not the group advisable, you said. It may be some time delay, but you don't know how much delay that was. So what precisely is your complaint?
And again, you know, relying on Escamilla-Rojas, the complaint or the violation of Rule 11 is that delay. Like I said, Escamilla-Rojas does not allow me to argue that the advisal should have been contemporaneous with the court verifying that she understood those rights.
And it's only the delay that you're talking about. But you don't know how long that delay was. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
Yeah. And,
I still don't understand then the answer to my question. Escamilla-Rojas didn't – you observed that the facts were that there were seven or eight people in the group that was pulled out, but it wasn't challenged. The question of the inquiry into whether she actually understood her rights and was waiving them wasn't actually discussed in Escamilla-Rojas. Is that right or wrong?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you repeat?
Is that right or wrong?
I couldn't hear the part before that.
I still don't understand whether you are arguing only about the delay or whether you are also arguing that there is, with regard to the period that the five people were pulled out and she was interrogated as one of those five people but not individually and face-to-face, whether that's a separate problem. I can't understand whether you're claiming that or not claiming that.
Oh, okay. No, Your Honor, I'm just referring to the delay, not to the group, not to her being called out at, in that group of five people. Because
And you're not arguing that because you never argued it?
Well, I didn't argue it partially because she was actually spoken to separately in that group of five. Basically, she was just called up, and then the judge did speak to her one-on-one to verify that she understood her rights. She didn't ask the five of them whether or not they understood if she went by one-by-one through each individual person.
Is that the practice they follow nowadays?
Depending on the judge, Your Honor, the groups are from five to eight people, and depending on some judges do actually call them up and give them the advices separately, give the advice and then verify that they understand. One judge does that. The majority do not. They do the big advisal, and then they call them up in groups. Some groups come up much quicker. So that
when the small groups come up, does the magistrate judge address each one of the five by their Ms. Smith or Ms. Arquette?
Normally, yes, Your Honor. Normally, most
did you hear the advisement? Did you understand the advisement? Do you have any questions? Do they proceed in that fashion?
Yes, they do. And then
in this case?
Well,
in this case, you're saying that those questions were asked one by one or asked of all five?
They were asked one by one.
Well, it doesn't look like that in the transcript. That's why that's what's very confusing about what you're saying.
Maybe I'm confused about that, Your Honor. I thought it.
He asked, do you each of you understand your right to a court trial? Interpreter, all answer yes. Do each of you understand the maximum penalties? Interpreter, all answer yes.
But you're telling us that that wasn't all in general. They answered separately?
I'm sorry. I thought she had asked individually. I think I'm mistaken as to
I'm curious if that's what they're doing nowadays as a result of our case law.
Well, Your Honor, it does change from case to case and from judge to judge. And the bigger concern here is that in these cases, in Ms. Arquette Ramos, for example, making sure that the court is making sure that the individual actually understands, that the individuals understand their rights. And
so your concern is that because there was a delay, there's some question about whether or not she understood her rights?
Right. And that's something that it's really hard to be able to ascertain when you have big delays between the advisal rights and the court verifying that they understood those rights in a courtroom with 70 individuals. And so
in the group of five, was counsel there with her?
Counsel is behind the individual.
Behind the individual.
Standing up in a courtroom a little bit bigger than this one.
I remain baffled because I understood your argument in your brief to be that the judge's speech is to be person to person, and that means one-on-one. And now you're saying that first you said, well, that's what happened here, but now we just saw that isn't what happened here. So,
And I'm sorry, I did misspeak.
I'm sorry, what?
I did misspeak. So that is
so what are you arguing?
That the court is supposed to advise them and verify that they understood their rights personally, meaning one-to-one, instead of in a group. Either the advisal, which is at the beginning of this hearing, or when they're called up to the front, that should also be done individually. When the judge verifies that, in fact, the person understands those rights.
You know, you're almost out of time. Do you want to say a minute about harmlessness? Do you want to say anything about harmlessness?
Your Honor, just briefly, I think under the other cases, I think Ms. Arquette Ramos's case can be differentiated from Aguilar-Vera and also from Escamilla Rojas. In Aguilar-Vera, the court found that the individual had actually withdrawn the request for an individual change of plea hearing. So they had withdrawn their desire to have one. And in Escamilla Rojas, the court did point out that counsel in that case was experienced counsel. I believe the language that was actually used was superior counsel. And none of that can be found with this transcript.
There's no indication here that she would have pled guilty had the rights been determined in a different way or the waiver.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I'd like to reserve the amount that I have left. Thank you.
Good Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Wilbert Rocker. I'm a Special Assistant United States Attorney out of the District of Arizona. In this case, there was no proper preservation of the objection. There was no Rule 11 error. And
I thought there was a repeated preservation of the objection. I feel like both of you are arguing a different case.
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
I thought there was a repeated preservation of the objection. I thought she was repeatedly saying that this was improper and she was didn't want to go along with it.
Your Honor, that is true. At the very beginning of the proceeding, defense counsel didn't make the objection on the record.
I'm supposed to keep saying it over and over again?
Well, Your Honor, our position is that it was an implied waiver with the sense that he allowed his his client to proceed with the change of plea hearing.
He should have walked out?
He could have requested a continuance or even set the matter for trial if defense counsel had wanted.
Well, he didn't want to set it for trial. He wanted a proper plea hearing.
I beg your pardon, Your
Honor. Didn't necessarily want to set it for trial. He wanted a proper plea hearing, which is what she said at the beginning.
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right, this seems like a non-starter. Let's go on.
Defense counsel did, in fact, give his approval to the judge's change of plea hearing. On the record, when he was inquired as to whether defense counsel wanted the court to accept his client's change of plea, he did answer.
Well, yes, because he wasn't going to get any other form of change of plea hearing. But that's different from saying that he was agreeing to the format.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, so let's go on.
Okay. Initially, he made the objection under Rule 11 and requested an individual hearing. When the opportunity came to make the objection, defense counsel conceded to the court that five times that there was nothing that the court did improper. It was the proceeding as a whole. Everything the court said to his client was proper, and that the proceeding is what he was having an issue with, the general advisement. Therefore, we feel
and I take it you agree he waived any claim that the court never explained the elements of the offense.
I beg your pardon, Your Honor.
I take it you agree that he waived. You're saying he waived the claim the court never explained the elements of the offense.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Which may not go to the plea hearing itself, but might be if we got into the harmlessness question.
That would be correct, Your Honor.
All right.
With respect to the Rule 11 advisement, this court has ruled both in Escamilla-Rojas and in Aguilar-Vera that it's not so much the en masse advisal of the rights, it's more the questioning by.
All right, so what about the questioning? Here you had, five people. And you were reading before the way it went, which was not a one-on-one conversation. It was, you know, do any of you, or do all of you understand X? And then they all said something. I gather they all said yes en masse or something. Is there any case law about whether that's proper as opposed to going to each person and saying, you know, Miss So-and-so, do you waive your right to a trial?
Your Honor, I don't believe that there is anything that is specifically on point.
Okay.
I would say that Escamilla-Rojas and Aguilar-Vera kind of touched on that issue in the sense that they did not find any error with that type of.
Because nobody seemed to be litigating it. But and even though it took a while to get this out of your opponent, it appears that I've read his brief as challenging it, but he seems to have forgotten that.
That would be correct, that it's not specifically challenged in either of those two cases.
Okay.
Specifically.
And the argument, as I understand it, is that personally means personally, one-on-one, at least as to the actual waivers.
Yes, Your Honor, that is, I think, what defense counsel is right. Arguing in that respect.
And the reason you don't think that's true is?
I believe that even in Roblero-Solis and Escamilla-Rojas, the court did go into the definition of personally, where it does not have to be specifically a one-on-one interaction.
Well, actually, the advisements, but that is listening is one thing, and actual making a waiver is another thing, no?
That is correct, Your Honor. I think that with the ability of the court, as the magistrate stated, to call them up in smaller groups because she could see and hear their reaction and the interpreter could see and hear their reaction, addresses the issue of the personally aspect of the waiver of the rights, Your Honor.
And suppose we thought you were wrong about that. Do you want to go into the harmless error argument?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The harmless error issue. I'm sorry. I have a bit of a cold, so I'm having a hard time talking up.
It could go to the harmless error aspect of it. The position is that even if the court were to find errors under Rule 11, the Rule 11 advisal of or the waiver of the rights, that any error still would be harmless because there is nothing in the record that would indicate she would have pled differently.
But isn't that your burden?
That's correct, Your Honor, and there is nothing in the record to show.
But isn't it your burden, the government's burden, if there were in fact a constitutional problem, to demonstrate that she wouldn't have?
That is.
So how are you demonstrating it?
By examining the record and
looking at a vacuum.
I'm
and
sorry.
The fact that there's a vacuum. You're saying the fact that there's no affirmative indication that she wouldn't have, therefore means that she wouldn't have.
That is correct, Your Honor. She had multiple opportunities to state that she did not want to go forward, to state that she had any type of objection to the way the proceeding was going forward. Defense counsel did as well, and all answered in the affirmative that they wanted the proceeding to go forward. In fact, that she did understand her rights to a trial. She wished to waive those rights. Defense counsel asked the court to accept his client's plea. Defense counsel even stated on the record that he felt his client was competent to proceed and knew the rights that she was giving up and that she wished to go forward.
Has the practice changed at all in the arraignment?
Since this case, Your Honor?
Well, not since this case. Well, I guess maybe since this case. Or since our published opinions.
Yes, Your Honor, it has. As defense counsel did note, it changes depending upon the magistrate judge that is doing the proceeding.
Some magistrate judges will address each defendant individually.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And it appears that that's what happened in Escamilla Rojas, actually, according to the facts. It says right here that after the general address, the magistrate judge called the defendants individually to the front of the courtroom. There, each defendant was asked individually whether he understood the information that had earlier been conveyed. Is that incorrect?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
All right. So that's not an example of an instance in which this was accepted. Even sub silentio.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that would be correct.
All right. Is there any? You said there was some other case.
I believe Eric Aguilar-Vera. There was.
It would be helpful if you told us. You know, we're not inaccurate about what was in the cases. Okay. You think Aguilar-Vera is a case?
Aguilar-Vera, I do believe that there was more of an individualized questioning along the lines of Escamilla Rojas. As well. In this case, Your Honor, I do think that with respect to the defendant in this case, the court did go through a litany of questions. Do the defendants understand the maximum penalties? Are they being forced or threatened to plead guilty? And in that respect, they did all answer in a smaller collective group of five in the affirmative.
They answered collectively, yes.
That is correct, Your Honor. But as the magistrate did point out, she did that so that because she was able to see and hear the responses, as well as the interpreter was able to see and hear the response. The magistrate judge did individually ask each defendant how they pled and did get an individualized response in that respect, Your Honor.
Okay.
Any further questions?
Okay.
May I be excused?
Okay. I see. You have 30 seconds, so you don't have to use it.
Just briefly, speaking about the process, it does change from judge to judge. As the court had mentioned, I did want to point out a couple of things. That's part of the reason that I think it would behoove the court to do something more than what was done in Escamilla-Rojas. In Escamilla-Rojas, in the opinion, they tried to give some guidance in the footnote. Depending on the judge, you get either something like this case where you have five individuals being brought down after the advisement and spoken to at the same time. In others, 10 people are brought up, and each of them is asked individually in a row. So I would, if the court is going to rule against Mr. Cataramos, I would still request the court give some guidance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe excuse me, Your Honor.
Thank you. The matter is submitted. We appreciate your arguments.